interesting in the Sanskrit word for the English here, the word gadaya, the derivative of gada, meaning the mace. In English, mace has two meanings. Of course, it means the club that the Lord is carrying, but also in our modern times, mace is that stuff you spray to protect yourself from attackers, so it has a very similar meaning. A gada protects you from attackers, but so does mace. Anyway, just an observation. Translation. Certainly, we have stolen the charge of the inhabitants of Rasatala and have lost all shame. Although bitten by your powerful mace, I shall stay here in the water for some time because having created enmity with a powerful enemy, I now have no place to go. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The demon should have known that God cannot be driven out of any place, for he is all-pervading. Demons think that their possessions, think of their possessions as their property, but actually, everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can take anything at any time that he likes. Om agyana tamarandasya janan janashalakaya chaksu unmilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha mukam karoti vachanam bhangum lam jayate girim yakripa tamaham bande sri gurum dinitarino avanchakapatirubhyascha kripa sindhu bahe bacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha jaya sri krishna chaitanya prabhu nitananda sri advaita shigaradha shivasidhi gaura bhaktivinoda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare my only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances to you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. By your recitation, one attains transcendental bliss, because your syllables shower pure love of God. You are to be served by everyone, always, for you are an incarnation of Lord Krishna. I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating upon his lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate this great literature, Srimad Bhagavatam. It's interesting how fragile these bodies are. Just a slight little change in the weather, and you hear all the coughing. Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture in 1972 in Los Angeles, and the devotees were coughing quite a bit like this, and he stopped. He said, "What is this? Are they sick?" "So no, they're not feeling very well. Weather change and all." Prabhupada said, "So? They should be wearing jackets. You should take care of them. This is the duty of the temple president to see that all the devotees are well cared for. They must be in good health so they can execute their devotional service." So we see just a slight little change, but we see even more so how Prabhupada was so attentive to the circumstances of his devotees. He was not aloof, you know, just disconnected, oh, these people, they'll do whatever I say. No, he had great concern for his disciples, and how much more so he would have great concern for all of you as his great-grandchildren. So just an interesting point to observe there. So there is a verse, a very famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita, which I'd like all the students to chant together. I'm sure it's one that you know. It's on the screen here, so everyone can chant with me. Paritranaya sadhunam vinasaya chaduskritam dharma samstarpanarthaya. I knew that would be one that I would be able to get you all to chant because you've all probably memorized it 100 times already. So, translation, to deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. This verse is very interesting because Krishna denotes three prominent things in this verse. To deliver the pious, that's one thing, the devotees, to protect the devotees, to annihilate the miscreants, to do away with the demons, and to reestablish the principles of religion. These are three principles that he points out here as to why he appears. So in this particular pastime that we're reading about of Sri Varahadev and Hiranyaksha, we are seeing it brought to a conclusive highlight in this particular chapter 18. We've read how the sages were cursed, Jai and Vijay, and how they had to take their births as demons, and how they made their appearance in the consummation between the sage and his wife, and the birth as a result of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu. So we've read all of that up to here, and now the first of these two brothers, Hiranyaksha, we're highlighting at the complete his activities, because now he's got his fight going with Lord Varaha. Great exchange here, which is interesting because, who fights with the Lord? You know? So, but we see here that sometimes the Lord himself has a little, I'd like to get a little tussle going here, but who's going to tussle with me? So he arranges for devotees to come here and manifest in this arm. Now, Mother Bhumi, she's in great distress because she's been plundered by the demon class headed by Hiranyaksha. And this plundering has caused her to fall out of the orbit and drop into the causal ocean. This is not where the earth usually resides, in the bottom of the causal ocean. Now, we understand also that the demon Hiranyaksha stole the earth directly and hid her in the bottom of the ocean. He's trying to take what's not his. If you try to snatch something off of your classmate's lunch tray, you quickly, if they have a sweet wrapped up, you put it in your pocket. You don't want them to see that you took it. Oh, no, it wasn't me. No, check it. So you try to hide it when you steal something. If you're known for acquiring Mahaprasadam by different variety of means, you generally hide it when you're making away with it. So Hiranyaksha has done this. He's stolen the planet Earth, which is not his. Everything belongs to the Lord, as his verse states, but he's hidden it now. Now, it's interesting because these activities being described, there's two different Lord Varahas. There's unlimited Lord Varahas. As Prabhupada notes back in chapter 13, verse number 31, and this is interesting. According to Jiva Goswami, the Vedic literature has described the incarnation of Lord Varaha in two different devastations, namely the Chakshusha devastation and the Swayambhuva devastation. Everything that goes on in the universe has a descriptive title. So these two different devastations at two different times. This particular appearance of the boar incarnation took place in the Swayambhuva devastation, when all the planets in the higher, all the planets higher than Jana, Mahar, and Satyalokas merged into the waters of devastation. We know at the end of the universe, everything's destroyed. This particular incarnation, the one we're describing here, of the boar, was seen by the inhabitants of the planets mentioned above. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that the sage Maitreya amalgamated, that's a big word. Does anybody know what that word amalgamated means? Brings together. You take a lot of different things and bring them together. So he's suggesting, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is suggesting that Maitreya has brought together both pastimes of the Lord and summarized them in this description. This is something the Acharyas have the foresight spiritually to do, to bring this together. Now, it's amazing. If we do an in-depth study, that Prabhupada has done an in-depth study here of the Acharyas and has been able to clarify this point for us. Actually, you may not know this, but when Srila Prabhupada traveled all those years throughout the globe in his manifest Leela, he always carried with him two books. He carried more books sometimes, but always two particular books. One of them was the Sanskrit English Dictionary, and the other was the commentary by the Acharyas on the Bhagavat. Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, all like this. And so Srila Prabhupada would study these. very, very detailedly in making his own Bhaktivedanta purports. So this wasn't, I mean, aside from the fact it was Prabhupada's own inner realizations, it wasn't just random. This was based upon these different presentations by the acharyas. So this is a very important point here. So back to our reference to this verse from the Bhagavad Gita. We accept that this combined explanation by Vidura, and we see that doing so, the Lord has performed two activities. As this verse notes, paritranaya sadhunam, deliver the devotees, and vinasaya chaduskritam, to annihilate the demons. This sounds a little harsh, but this is the Lord's purpose, to do away with the demoniac persons that will give great difficulty, violence, attacking of the peaceful class of people. So this sometimes the Lord has to appear and do like that. Now, in this chapter, we see that he delivers Bhumi twice. So how do we understand that he delivered her twice? Did Hiranyaksha sneak in a second time and take her again? But he was engaged in the battle. So the first time that Varahadev delivers Bhumi, he brings her up from the depths of the causal ocean. Now, those of you that may have a visual picture of what a pig looks like, the boar has tusks. And so those tusks are very perfect for scooping up something. So the Lord has used those to scoop the earth planet up from the depths of the causal ocean. Then once he rises out of the ocean, he's confronted by Hiranyaksha, who challenges him to battle. Okay, now the Lord has Bhumi on his tusk, but he's got to battle with this demon. So what he does is he delivers Bhumi a second time by placing her on top of the ocean, but transferring his power for her to be able to float on that ocean and not sink. So he's delivered her a second time. Okay, I got to fight with this guy. Let me just set you over here. Here's my potency so you don't drop into the ocean again. All right, let's get on with it, Hiranyaksha. So like that, he delivers the planet twice. This ability to float is a mystic power that he transfers to Bhumi Devi. I'm reminded when my granddaughters were visiting here, just down the street from me is Divyanga and Govinda Mohini, and they have a pool. And they would let us go down and swim in that pool when the granddaughters were visiting. And my youngest granddaughter, Deera, was very young at the time. And she was afraid to be in the water by herself because she couldn't float. So I would take my hand and place it under the small of her back. And through the strength of my arm, I was able to hold her up, and she imagined she was floating, and she was very happy. So in this similar way, the Lord has transferred this ability to float to Mother Bhumi and has satisfied her. Deera thought that, oh, I'm floating now. In reality, it was her grandpa's potency, you could say. And so Bhumi Devi appeared to be floating, but in reality, it was the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's mystic powers. So then, after doing this, Varaha turns his attention to Hiranyaksha. Now, Prabhupada starts off this purport by saying the demon should have known that God cannot be driven out of any place, for he is all-pervading. Hiranyaksha is trying to dismiss Lord Vishnu in whatever incarnation he comes. He doesn't care. You're Vishnu, you've got to go. I'm in charge here. This was his mentality. Sometimes, and this mentality was completely incorrect. It wasn't beneficial. Sometimes you students may have heard your mother or father say to you, you should have known better than to do that. Anybody ever heard that? Parents ever said that? Yeah, you should have known better than to do that. So this is, we see from this chapter that Hiranyaksha should have known better than to assume that he can replace or remove the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he didn't. And thus, the battle begins. Now, it's an age-old practice that takes place here. It's worth noting this, that when two opponents begin to square off with each other, there's a bit of what we call nowadays as trash talking. And this is something that sometimes is done amongst friends, but can be very strongly done amongst enemies. But, you know, it's a common practice in different types of sporting events. We see this, that the opponents will, in public, you know, when I was very young, there was a famous boxer by the name of Muhammad Ali. And, well, some of you know this. Okay. I was thinking I was swimming upstream here with this analogy, but apparently not. So Muhammad Ali had many, many famous fights. Two of his most famous were with Joe Frazier and George Foreman. These were iconic, significant fights in his career. And they were billed as the fight of the century, or the other one was billed as the thriller in Manila, because the battle took place in the country of Manila. So in this way, they were fierce rivalries between these two. And I don't want to go too far down this line, but some of the trash-talking famous lines that Muhammad Ali would use, he said, "I'm going to beat him so bad that he's going to need a shoehorn to put his hat on." Now think about that for a second. Or the other one that he said, "If you even dream about beating me, you better wake up and apologize to me." Or another one that he said, "You're just simply too ugly to be the champion of the world." So in this way, this kind of trash talking goes on between two opponents, really get into it. And we see this is exactly what's going on in this chapter between Varaha and Hiranyaksha. "Oh, look, it's an amphibious beast," indicating something to do with the water. Or, "You cannot take the earth from me in my presence and not be hurt." Or, "Oh, you fool, your power is only mystical. But today I shall enliven my kinsmen by killing you." These are all the words that Hiranyaksha threw against Varahadev. Now, when we come before Radhasham Sundar, we come, we fold our hands, we offer nice prayers. Not these kind of prayers. Not these kind of statements. These are not the statements that one offers to the Lord in reverence and respect. These are challenging statements. "Oh, you beast. What a fool you are. You can't do that without answering to me." So this mood is very strong in the challenging. And then we have Varaha's side. Varaha's side says, "Indeed." He agrees with him just to give him that little, "Indeed. We are creatures of the jungle," being a boar, and boars live in the jungle or in the forest, "and we are searching after hunting dogs like you." Now, boars, around here in Alachua, particularly in the Cross area, we have wild boars. And they're very well known for tearing up the ground, and they'll even attack dogs. So sometimes, you know, when people go out to rid the boars on their property, they take their dogs with them, but sometimes those dogs get attacked. So Varaha is identifying himself for the sake of this demon. "Yes, I'm a creature of the jungle, a boar, and we're looking for hunting dogs like you." So really quite an insult. "Not only are you a dog, but I'm looking for you and you're going to answer for this." Or he says, "One who is freed from the entanglement of death has no fear from the loose talk in which you're indulging in, for you are bound up by the laws of nature." So he's insulting him. Someone who's actually free from death, which you're about to find out because I'm going to kill you. Someone who's free from death, they're not bound up by the laws of nature, but you're about to find out what those laws are. And then he concludes saying, "One may be proud, yet he does not deserve a seat in the assembly if he fails to fulfill his promised word." Now, in this case, the promised word by Hiranyaksha is that he's going to kill Varahadev. Varaha knows better than this. And he says to him, you don't even deserve to sit in this assembly because you're thinking that you're going to deliver something you can't deliver. So it's worth noting that this type of trash talk by Hiranyaksha is expected because, as we find back in chapter 17, Hiranyaksha had a real anger issue. It says in chapter 17, Hiranyaksha's temper was very difficult to control. Very difficult to control. Anybody have an anger rise sometimes and it's a little hard to keep it in check? And yeah, some of us may have had that. So now in the Gita, again, we know that anger is one of the steps to falling down from the transcendental platform. Now, as students, young or old, either way, we have to be very careful about not allowing our anger to rule our actions. Doesn't provide any good result. Anytime we get very angry and scream or yell at someone, or, you know, even worse, maybe throw something across the room or slam the door, whatever it is that we do when we get angry, you know, these actions never benefit us. They fog our intelligence, they drag down our consciousness, and they put us on a very base level of existence as opposed to rising above all this, which is what the Bhagavad Gita encourages us, that we should rise above this type of activity, this type of anger. We should be free from it. And how do we become free from it? By realizing that everything is the result of the Lord's involvement. Now, this brings us to an interesting point. We see Lord Varaha's in full fighting mode here. He's not just kind of, No, he's focused. He's got his mace. He's set the earth planet aside. He's ready to go at it. But he doesn't have any anger. This is a very important thing. There is no anger there. He's simply performing this activity as one of the duties he does as Lord Vishnu. Now, we say duties. I mean, Lord Vishnu has no required duties, but this is something he does, as we read in this verse in the Gita. I come protect the devotees. So he's come to protect the devotees and annihilate the miscreants. And in this way, he's manifesting this, but it's free from anger. We have seen sometimes Srila Prabhupada in his manifest pastimes, he could be very strong, very vocal in chastising someone, and then immediately turn to another person and praise them and appreciate them. So this showed that there was no uncontrolled anger in this. It was simply done out of requirement. So Varaha is fully elevated above this position of anger that Hiranyaksha is manifesting. Now, of course, we understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not subjected to the three modes of material nature. This is a basic principle. And we understand that Hiranyaksha is completely controlled by the modes of nature. Look at how he took his birth. When he took his birth, so many bad omens were there. I mean, the whole list is given in that chapter. So this type of mood of anger follows him throughout his entire existence. And ultimately, in what we know, no spoiler alert here because we've all heard the story, in what we know is going to be his demise. So this is a very essential understanding that the battle is there, the fight is going on, trash talking is happening, but there's no anger on the part of the Personality of Godhead. He's simply executing another one of his divine leelas. Now, another point we see is in the final words of this purport that Prabhupada notes that nothing belongs to us and everything can be taken away on a moment's notice. Sometimes we have something we cherish very much and we lose it. I recently had an experience where I have a cherished Kusa Asan that I've had for, I don't know, probably 40 years. You can imagine how many pujas I've done with that. It's gone to this place and that place, traveled to this country and that country, and, you know, used it for indigenous. And I inadvertently set it down. And in that, I spaced out and forgot to pick it up. And by the time I got to unloading everything I'd loaded into my car and realized it was gone, It was just that gone. So everything can be gone in a moment's notice because we're not in control. Everything ultimately belongs to the Lord. So a devotee doesn't find fault or blame others, but realizes that everything happens under the watchful eye of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We may or may not understand the full implications of it, but if we have that mentality, that removes that anger of looking at someone else and say, oh, you did that. Oh, you're the reason that happened. You know, we don't want that mentality as a devotee. So this doesn't mean that we're careless or haphazard with what possessions the Lord has given us, but neither should we be overly attached to these items. So this is some short points from here, the guidelines for the Worship Wednesday classes that we should finish by 8:30, which it currently is, and be able to take some questions from the students if they have any. I don't know why they would. They never have any questions during the times I speak at the school. Everybody's just sitting. But we'll see if any of the students before they depart have any questions. But tomorrow, even if you're not able to be in the class, you should read up because tomorrow begins the match of the millennium. You want to talk about a big, you know, you see these advertisements all over, so-and-so is boxing so-and-so, or now they have this, what do they call this, mixed martial arts, where they basically just throw two people in a cage and let them beat each other to death. How that's entertainment, I have no idea. Maybe for the demons, this is entertainment, but at any rate, so tomorrow begins the real match of the millennium, where we're going to see Varaha and Hiranyaksha go at it. Who wins? I wonder. Now, if you were a betting person... No, we won't go there. All right. Any students have any questions? Ah, as I expected. All right. Prabhu, in the back there? Yes.
Thank you, Chaitaratma, for the class. I'm glad that you mentioned the globe of the earth fell down into the Garbhodox ocean. Because sometimes devotees try to say that Bhumandala slipped down into the Garbhodox ocean. But as you know, the Garbhodox ocean, halfway of the universe, it's 4 billion miles across. So how are you going to get that plate of Bhumandala down into the lower part? Because each universe is shaped like a globe. So that's good that you mentioned that the globe of the earth fell down to the lower. Thank you.
Well, I had no point I was trying to make as far as counteracting anybody's thoughts, but simply repeating what's there in our Shastra. Yeah. Yes, Mother Jayashri Radhe, let's get a microphone over to you. Not that you or I have ever been accused of needing a microphone.
I was just going to, you mentioned about not getting overly angry and to be able to do things without anger and being overly attached to things. So I was just wondering if you had some practical tips for young people who might not be fully in control of all that all the time. Like, how can we practice controlling our mind when it gets the best of us?
You mean that happens to some of these students? I thought these were all elevated pure devotees. Some of you get angry in classrooms or in your dealings with each other. Yeah, it does happen, doesn't it? This anger happens primarily from two factors. One, when we are seeking to acquire something that we don't have. Something someone else has, something we saw somewhere else that we want. And in wanting that, but not getting it, emotions arise within us, and those emotions can lead to anger if we let them follow through. However, if when that thought enters into the mind, we appreciate the fact that if the Lord desires this, it'll come, and if he doesn't, then it won't. And we practice that detachment, then that checks anger right there. Now, of course, that's very nice to say and very eloquent presentation in the understanding of it, but how do we actually apply that? That's the hard part. Practice and detachment. This is what the Bhagavad Gita encourages us. To regularly practice detaching ourselves from these things which we're desiring but have no ability to manifest. You know, the entire commercial industry is based on that factor, making us lust after. Now, I work with a guy that every single time a new iPhone comes out, he's got to go buy it. I mean, I've got the same iPhone that I've had for, you know, whatever, you know. It's probably, you know, generation 8 or 9 back, but it does the job. So if we become satisfied by what we've got with the minimal amount of effort and we're able to perform our duties with it, then okay, fine. But if I'm driven by the fact that, oh, now I have to have this, oh, this is, and this is how the consumer industry works. To encourage us that you're not going to be happy until you get A, B, C, D, or E, whatever it is, whatever they're promoting. And every single item out there is promoted in the same manner. You want happiness? You got to have this. You want to be satisfied? You got to have this. You want perfect bliss? You got to have this. But the reality is that we know all of these material things have a finite existence, and we are eternal. So if we can somehow or another remember that eternal existence that we actually are, and that how that eternal activity can only be eternal existence can only be satisfied by eternal activities, namely devotional service, something that stays with us even when this finite body ends, then that's how we control our mind. That's how we detach ourselves from being angry. I mean, I've been to the school a few times and spoken once or twice, and I've never seen any of these students manifest any anger. I guess they're all very advanced devotees, but maybe some of you teachers have seen it because you deal with them day in and day out. Yeah, but yeah, we have to realize that these emotions that arise are separate from who I am. That's a very clear way to do that.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Yes. You mentioned that Prabhupada carried 2 books.
Uh-huh.
So how big were the commentaries? How many books used to be? Did he used to carry a suitcase full of books?
Say that again?
The commentaries, you said Prabhupada carried commentaries of acharyas.
Yeah.
How many books were?
It was one book, very thick book.
Bengali, English?
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would imagine it was probably Sanskrit. But, you know, maybe some of it was in Bengali, but probably Sanskrit, yeah. Yeah. I have 2 little replicas of that on my desk for Srila Prabhupada on my altar. Oh, just, and his little suitcase, a replica there too, yeah. Okay, well, I did my duty. I finished on time, asked for questions, not so many. This idea of give the students time to ask questions was obviously formatted by somebody that doesn't deal with this age group. I don't know, do you have any more success, teachers, getting questions out of them in your classrooms? I would imagine you must. You got a question back there? No, all right. I mean, I would have put together more points, but the subject matter we have to appreciate in this chapter is that there is fighting in this world. And Lord Varaha and Hiranyaksha are a perfect example of this. Now, we generally don't think so much in this regards with Hiranyakasipu and Nrisingadeva because that was a very uneven battle. I mean, any battle that a demon has with Vishnu is uneven. But Nrisingadeva was like, you know, this is an overwhelming. Plus, the pastime with Nrisingadeva, we see that the Lord manifests according to the particular requirements of that leela. In the pastime of Nrisingadeva, the Lord had to manifest, you know, not an animal, not a human, not inside, not outside, not daytime, not all these different conditions that Lord Brahma had awarded to Hiranyakasipu. Actually, after Nrisingadeva dispatched Hiranyakasipu, he chastised, some of you may not know this, he chastised Lord Brahma. you're giving these benedictions, it gives so much trouble for me. I have to think, okay, this way, but not that way, this way, you know? Don't give any benedictions like this anymore. So we gave even Brahma, what to speak of ourselves, even Brahma gets chastised from time to time. So we should understand that. So, and in the case of Lord Varaha, the requirement was to scoop up the earth planet from the depths of the ocean. Now, this is something that a boar with its tusks and its flat-snouted nose can easily do. This is how they perform that activity with this part of their body, they're scooping like that. So this was the appearance of the Lord in different forms is completely related to the activity he has to perform within that form. Matsya, saving the boat with the Vedas on it. You know, so this is what a fish can do. It's in the water already. So different activities like this. So this is a necessity for us to realize that the Lord will manifest in a variety of different forms according to the need of that purpose, to deliver the devotees or to annihilate the miscreants. Paritranaya sadhanam, vinasaya chaduskritam. This is his two primary activities. Yes, Prabhu.
So in which way, because the students probably want to know, which way does anger manifest? Does it manifest through the eyes?
It can manifest in all different ways. Somebody that's really angry, you just look at them, you see their eyes are, you know, and maybe verbally. In one's activities, shaking. Descriptions are given of anger manifesting. You know, when Advaita Acharya was touring Mathura, and there was one Brahmin in Mathura that was known for his brahminical activities, but he was also known for criticizing Vaishnavas. This was his habit. That devotee, you know, speaking ill of him. He had the let's just use the practical word, stupidity, to do that in front of Advaita Acharya, criticize other Vaishnavas. And the description given in the Chaitanya Bhagavat is that Advaita Acharya's eyes became angry and red like fire. So in the eyes it can manifest. And then it describes how in his voice he spoke very loud and strong, so it can manifest in the voice. And that how he raised his clenched fist in proclamation. So in the physical form it can manifest. Anger can manifest in so many forms. Should I finish that story? No? Nobody wants that story finished? I'm going to finish it anyway. So Advaita Acharya cursed this Brahmin. He said, I curse you that for finding fault with the Vaishnavas, you are destined to go to hell, by which I will take off your head with my chakra. And he manifested his Sudarshan chakra. He's Mahavishnu, after all. This woke the Brahmin up. You know, he came to his senses and realized his mistake and immediately fell at the feet of Advaita Acharya and begged for forgiveness. This shows that his intelligence overcame his anger. So he immediately begged from Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya told him four things. I will forgive you on these four conditions. Number one, never criticize a Vaishnava again. Number two, remove all such thoughts from your mind and your heart. Number three, give in charity to the Vaishnavas. And number four, go to the home of every Vaishnava in Mathura and beg their forgiveness. So Advaita Acharya then continued on his pilgrimage, returned to Navadvip from Vrindavan. And the Brahmin did just that. He always spoke nicely to the Vaishnavas after that. He went to every home and begged forgiveness. People were amazed. Oh, what happened to him? Some said, oh, he met one very elevated personality and he's been changed. So, you know, sometimes anger will manifest through the eyes, through the voice, through the physical activities. But it can be easily overcome just as well. All right. We'll finish there then. All right, a little bit, 2 minutes early. That's good. All right. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.